Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi.
This is take two.
Yeah, in a sense, because we started to record this full episode.
We always say this, but we record our full episode first, then another shot. So we backtrack our timing for some weird reason. We do that. I don't know why we do that.
But
and then John talked about root beer for about 45 minutes.
Yeah, so and then John posed a question.
We couldn't do an episode.
We were like, we can't.
Actually, you know what happened was we were in the middle of the toys. What do you buy your kids discussion?
And then Matt went on a 45-minute
rant about Beyonce blades.
Yeah, he did.
And
that is the difference between like Miles and you is he's like Beyblades, and you're like Beyonce has blades.
That's the biggest.
Is it
difference.
A new shaving kit? Like that's exactly what you.
John, that is a multi-million-dollar idea.
Yeah, it is.
Come out with a line of Beyonce blades before any dedicators do it, since we're talking
That's
about it.
That's a good
on
point.
Air. I'm sure that Beyonce would love to be associated with blades and tops and toys. Yeah.
Well, I mean.
Maybe, you know.
You never know.
But if you don't know what we're talking about, listen to Thursday's episode. But we found ourselves in the middle of that discussion, and I was like, we should
like
probably
40 minutes.
Just
yeah.
make this another shot. So that's what happened there.
Yes.
So we would typically be drinking the new drink, but we actually ended up drinking it.
We explained it in another,
on
shot.
Another shot.
It is vegan eggnog, though, for
delicious.
Those who have not listened to another shot. It is delicious. I'll put it this way. John is already through his.
I am
like barely halfway through mine.
Yeah.
And this is our last original episode for the year, because in the
Correct.
Next two Sundays we're going to do best ofs.
Right. And best of part one is coming out next Sunday, and then best of part two comes out actually in 2020. It'll be January, whatever that next Sunday is.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Fifth,
so,
I think.
Yeah, exactly. So those are coming out. They're hilarious. Please make sure you listen to them.
And thank you for everyone who contributed. It
yes.
helped Megan out a lot, and we really appreciate it.
Absolutely. We should mention live shows briefly.
Yes, let's do it.
We have two live shows announced, more potentially on the way. We have Brooklyn
at the Bell House.
At the Bell House on January 25th. And then we have Washington, D.C. at the Hamilton Live on February 12th. You can get all of your tickets in our show notes or go to oxygen.tv/MMLive.
And thank you to everyone who's been DMing us about your
yeah.
tickets. We're so excited to meet all of you.
And we should also mention, we love that you guys, when you guys tell us where you want us to go. But
yes.
just know that, like, yeah, we do want to come to every city in the country, especially Chicago. We see y'all in Chicago asking us to come out. But until anything's announced, like, just know that we're aware of everyone's
interest.
We will
interest. Make it to Chicago.
I think eventually we will.
Yeah, I got no doubt about it in my mind. Should we get into this week's case? It's weird to not have the drink intro, but again, listen to another shot to find out how this vegan eggnog is made.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Yeah.
So let's get into the show. We're going to talk about an Afghani girl named, I want to make sure this is right, Matt, Shajia. Does that sound right in your research?
Or is it Shajia?
Shajia?
I actually looked up how to pronounce it, and I couldn't find that name. I believe it would be Shajia.
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 Ah, Shajia.
It's spelled S-H-A-J-I-A for anyone out there, but I think it's Shajia.
All right, we'll go with Shajia. The sun is attacking everybody in here. Matt is like freaking out right now.
I told you it's offensive.
Anyway, an Afghani girl named Shazia was 13 years old when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan. The year was 1966. She grew up witnessing the atrocities of the war, including many of her family members being killed, which is absolutely tragic. In order to get her out of there, her family managed to arrange for her immigration to California in 1984. They also set up a marriage to a fellow Afghani that was already living in the United States. Her niece told Snapped, quote, she's very independent and she didn't want to be attached to anyone or rely on anyone or have to answer to anyone. She wanted to do what she wished to do, end quote. Good.
She's an independent woman.
Exactly. What she should want to do. But she didn't dare risk upsetting her family and went along with it. And this is very like cultural to have arranged marriages and like it's.
And she's Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Afghani, like yeah. From Afghanistan, it's a different culture.
Totally. Shazia loved being in America and loved the freedom, and eventually she felt it was okay to divorce her arranged husband. So newly single, she took some college classes and got a job to support herself. Within California's Bay Area, where I think Matt is from, Shazia found a strong Afghan community and made some close friends through which she met real love, Ghulam Ayobi.
Let me just say, I also feel like the fact that she felt okay to divorce her husband.
Yeah, that's
that feels very progressive to me. Like the fact that she felt comfortable enough to do that, because in a lot of cultures and a lot of religions, it's absolutely, even today in 2019, let alone in the 80s, it's forbidden.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a big step. That's a great point. Take a drink if you have any drink. He was 8 years old and, oh, sorry, 8 years older. And in his imagination.
Now that's a different culture.
That is far too young to be married.
That's an arrangement that
should not, my religion.
That should not be happening. He was 8 years older and in his 20s when the Soviets invaded. Sorry, I don't know why I'm adding words
You're
to this.
Seizing, dude. I warned this about it on another shot.
Years older and in his 20s when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. So Ghulam finished high school and college in Afghanistan. After the invasion, he joined the rebels fighting the Soviets and continued to fight in the civil war that followed in 1989.
That's right.
When the Taliban took over, Ghulam fled to Germany and worked to help the rest of his family escape. This is like, imagine like one of these things happening in life. It's like, I don't know. There's just like a lot of like traumatic events going on.
Yeah.
And especially for our generation. Yeah. Well, I guess I can't say our, your say
our generation
and my generation in America, like, what we complain about and what like the subway was
crabs on the subway.
It's a real thing.
I couldn't, it smelled like seafood on the subway.
Right, right.
Again, a real trauma.
Yeah.
It's just like what
I know
they have dealt
no,
with.
No, of course. It gives you perspective.
Like, yeah, they probably laugh.
Yeah, totally. I went to elementary school with two boys that came from Bosnia following their big kind of crisis. And it didn't click in until like late high school, early college. Like, you know, they were able to escape some of like the worst tragedies you can imagine and like just came to school with us and like none of us knew were the wiser, you know, and you kind of just have to think about what people go through just that aren't your own experiences, you know.
That's why it's important to get out of your comfort zone and meet other people.
Absolutely. Well, his nephew said he would send the family money. With his help, Ghulam's sister and her children were able to immigrate to California. Ghulam's sister got to know Shazia there and thought she would be a good match for Ghulam. A meeting was set up and Ghulam was all about it. His nephew said, quote, he would just rave about Shazia, how beautiful she is and how much he loves her, end quote. The two married and then moved to Germany. Ghulam's niece said, quote, they had actually what we call it Nika. It's a religious ceremony that we had to do before the men and women get together, end quote. I am unfamiliar with that. They spent the next 12 years there and they had four children together. Shazia had a very traditional life as the stay-at-home mom, but she very much wanted to move back to the United States.
Well, keep in mind, as you said, Shazia was like, she wanted this independent woman, you know, she wanted to be on her own, and certainly like the freedom in America enticed her. So it makes sense. In 2005, actually just 14 years ago, Shazia finally got what she wanted and the family moved to San Francisco Bay Area, Frisco, as they hate to call it. She continued to be a stay-at-home mom while Ghulam ran a hot dog cart and had a pizza parlor. Already,
I'm into this.
Ideal career.
Yeah.
Okay. But one day, a military contractor approached Ghulam about being a cultural advisor for the U.S. Army. seems like a very great job to have.
Especially in 2005, which, remember, the war on Iraq was sort of going on.
Still going on. His niece explained, quote, they recruited him to train American soldiers, get them prepared for, you know, being deployed to Afghanistan and serving there, end quote. Seems like a very legitimate type of job. He became stationed in Louisiana and came home every 2 to 3 months for just a week. It was a big sacrifice, but honestly, the money was good, and he wanted to make sure he could provide for his family, of course.
Yeah.
His income allowed the family to move from a small apartment to a big house in Sacramento. And with Coulomb's new...
Shout out to Sacramento. Sorry.
No one says anything back.
It's my hometown.
I almost did a sound effect, but I didn't. And with Coulomb's new connection, Shajia was able to pick up a little translating work just to stay busy. She even went back to school and took criminal justice classes at her local community college. With their new lifestyle, she was able to travel back to Afghanistan once or twice a year, which is great.
Yeah.
By 2011, the family was basically living the American dream, far from their war-torn beginnings. On December 18th, 2011, 45-year-old Shajia called 911. She reported that she and her husband had been carjacked. She told the 911 operator, quote, they shot my husband, but I'm still inside the car. They got off. Okay. An officer told Snapped, quote, she's directed to pull off the freeway and the patrol officers met Mrs. Iobi, end quote. She was unharmed, but Gulam was in critical condition. He had been shot in the head 3 times.
And is in critical condition. That's kind of amazing.
Exactly. Just that he hasn't been shot dead. Yeah. They rushed Gulam to the hospital and took Shajia in for her statement, of course, because she's the only other witness as far as we know.
Yeah.
She explained that her husband was an Afghan refugee working as a cultural specialist for the U.S. Army. She said she'd been only home for 24 hours after taking a red-eye flight. This kind of makes sense with, you know, their whole careers.
Mm-hmm.
A detective told Snap, quote, he arrived in Sacramento very early in the morning and he hadn't seen his kids for 6 months. So he stayed up all day, end quote. So cute. The evening, the two of them had gone to a dinner party hosted by some friends while Shajia's mom looked after the kids. The party ended around midnight, and since Gulam had now been awake for nearly 24 hours, he asked that she drive them home.
Okay.
Very smart, being responsible. In the interview tape, she said, quote, I started driving, I got close to the freeway, and then I heard another voice in the back. I didn't see him all the way in the back, and I couldn't see at all. Just came out all of a sudden. I just heard the noise, the voice first, end quote. A carjacker revealed himself in the back of a minivan and told them it was a robbery.
Okay.
Shajia continued, quote, I tried to see if I could talk him out of what he wants. I said, what do you want? You want money, whatever, you know, we can give it to you. Can you please don't do something, you know? He said, yeah, I told my husband to give him your wallet, end quote.
By the way, you're really good at kind of like reading through other people's quotes.
Oh, thanks.
I don't do well with that.
I'm fossils.
Super good.
Thank you.
It really does impress me.
Yeah, it really does. It's like you become the person.
I am Shajia.
You are Shajia, yeah.
But she said he refused and tried to grab the man. That's when she said she heard the first shot.
Okay.
During the interview with police, Shajia said, quote, as soon as he fired, I heard another voice, and it was a female voice. She got mad at him, called him or something, said like, why did you do it? We just wanted the money, end quote. Okay, so there seems to be...
Yeah.
Something going on here. After a brief argument, they told Shajia to stop the car. The carjackers told her not to look as they jumped out of the car. Shajia said it was too dark to make them out and wasn't sure how they got in the car in the first place. That's what I'm confused about.
Yeah, totally. Well, that's where it's not really making a lot of sense. But as you can imagine, the injuries were so severe, Gulam actually died from his injuries.
Terrible.
Shajia and the community were devastated. As the news reached the Sacramento area, the fear of gang violence and carjacking spiked. Of course they would. Forensics teams combed the van, and a detective said, quote, the shooting happened inside the van. We have no doubt about that from the trajectories involved and the shell casings, end quote. But the first big lead was discovered in a nearby apartment building. An officer told Snapped, quote, there's an apartment complex where a maintenance worker doing his normal rounds saw this brand new looking laptop bag right on top of the pile of trash, and when he opened it up, he found a wallet that turned out to be Mr. Iobi's identification in it, and it was covered in blood.
Well, that seems like something you're going to pull out of the trash. Like, it seems like, you know, like see something, say something.
Yeah,
it's like
totally.
So obvious
yeah.
and out of place that,
right.
like, of course you're going
to
pry.
Well, and you know, if they didn't find that, they wouldn't have had a lot to go on so far.
Well, that's
you know,
true.
Like, that
yeah.
was such a lucky Discovery, totally. And whoever left that bag there Stupid. Was a fucking moron.
Yeah, I'm happy when these people are morons.
Yeah, me too. Well, a pistol was also in the bag that matched the casings from the crime scene, so it would make sense that a perpetrator would want to ditch the gun and wallet, but the carjacking itself seemed a bit weird to detectives.
And to us
sitting here in this room. One detective said, quote, "It's very odd for people to be driving down a freeway and be carjacked in that manner."
Right, like, how you doing End that? Quote. You know, like, yeah, right. And no one else kind of sees it?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, then the FBI visited. I am literally like, something is wrong with my brain.
You want to pinch hit, tag out?
I just said the FBI.
Yeah.
Like, the way Wait, a child
what
would.
What did you say?
He literally said like FBI.
FBI.
FBI?
It's like, instead of saying, like, it's like Pisketti. It's you know, like, you're, getting the, you're not even getting the right
saying.
Word. Yeah.
It's like I'm three.
Yeah.
The FBI.
I had Sketty for dinner.
I had Sketty for dinner, and yeah. The FBI came over. Anyway, then the FBI.
Yes,
thank
female
you very much.
Body inspector. Whoop, whoop.
Visited, and maybe there was a bit.
Did you just make that up?
That's like on every T-shirt and every
I've
bodega.
I've never heard that before.
You
I was
guys
so
have heard this,
with
right?
How clever
yes,
you are.
Thank yes. you.
What?
I'll take credit.
Speaking of generations.
Yeah, I mean, like.
I want to join the FBI.
Oh, my God. I really
Should
regret.
Should never have said it. I regret it.
I really regret.
Regret opening my
flubbing.
Mouth.
How do I become an FBI
no,
member?
No, we're not doing this.
No, we're not doing that either. No, just silence him.
Matt
Megan,
just,
turn
like,
off his mic.
Away.
Yeah.
So maybe there was more to this, is what we're saying here with the FBI after they visited. Of course, being the Federal Bureau of Investigations.
Yes. Okay. Good to clarify. Yes. Confused. Good to clarify. Yes. Yes.
Did
yes.
Gollum's work as a military contractor have something to do with his murder? Well, it turns out that the FBI agent was Shazia's handler.
Interesting.
Which, don't even jump on the mic, Matt, please.
He's like, I want to be a handler.
He's so exactly. Yeah. I know exactly
I
what
know
he's,
exactly
trying,
what he's
to.
Trying to say.
He's inching towards the mic, and I said,
"He's laughing
no.
now. We got him
Please
off.
Please don't.
Thank God,
this is a pot. We're talking about a murder here."
Hey, I'm Jamie,
and I'm Justina,
and we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First, he ruined Twitter. Now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
A Sacramento police officer explained, quote, "I can't even say the FBI. The FBI counterintelligence has a program where people who are traveling abroad are recruited to when they return to the United States to give a report on basically what people are thinking, what their mindset is, and how they feel about America," end quote.
Good job.
Matt, please.
Just, no, FBI handlers are very
oh
important.
Oh, my God.
I think it's a very important job.
Are we 10 on this podcast, Matt?
I said it as, like, a joke.
I know.
Just, like, a simple thing, and then I wanted to move on. And then it was God. Taken, and it spiraled. I'm
Obviously,
sorry.
You need to get him an FBI shirt now.
No, that's what I'm going to get him for Christmas.
Yeah, clearly. That will be the last of it. Okay, so by New Year's 2012, it had already been 2 weeks since Ghulam had been shot. The authorities continued with their normal detective work and interviewed the family about Shazia and Ghulam. Apparently, Shazia had recently joined a new mosque and left her old community behind.
All right.
Which is interesting because, like, why, you know? She began following more Islamic rules, like wearing a burqa, and she made the kids follow her example. Ghulam's niece said, quote, "My uncle wanted them to be raised as an Afghan-American, to know their culture, but at the same time, I mean, you know, when we live here, we have to adapt to American lifestyle. She did not want to hear what my uncle has to say about the kids or her or their lifestyle or the way Shazia was raising the kids," end quote. So this is what we were kind of talking about. Like, it's a different kind of cultural upbringing,
sure,
different expectations. If you listen to another shot on Thursday, we talk a lot about relationship things. And I think this kind of falls into that conversation.
But I also sort of understand it being like the mother and saying like, well, yeah, you might be the uncle, but like, they're my kids and yeah, you don't get to choose how I raise them.
Detectives approached Shazia for another interview. This time they told her they wanted to clarify the forensic evidence with her, but she brought another layer to the investigation. From the tapes of the interview, she said, quote, "Over a year ago, I was somebody came to my door and wanted to visit me in the morning. And it was sometime in November of last year, 2010, the year before, showed me his ID badge, a CIA agent, said that he's a special operation or task or a task force or something," end quote.
I'm just going to say that was a good job of reading that, John, because that was hard.
Yeah, that was tough.
It's interesting to me, and I wonder about this, the amount of ums and just,
yeah,
you know, does that imply that there might be some
lying
going on, or is I can't tell.
Like, think about being in, like, you know, where they always talk about like false confessions and people who are actually innocent confess, because there's just so much pressure in that room.
Well, that's true.
And like, even public speaking, where you can have a speech right in front of you and be like you might not want to say. It's like a nervous tick.
I hear people,
that is a good point,
around the office just use it, you know.
I guess I say all the time too, so
I literally do it all the time.
We all do, yeah, in a sense. Okay. And especially when you're kind of maybe nervous in an interview,
it
comes out even more.
Okay. Of course.
But apparently the agent said that they had been watching Ghulam for some time and that he had been leaking information, possibly as a double agent.
Ooh.
Shazia said, quote, "Then I said, you could just fire him, you know, if he's not a good person for the job." He said, "No, we can do that, but that's not enough. We have to get rid of him. They just hand me a bag, said that, okay, save this for right now, and we will notify you next time what to do about it. I just took it, and I said, let me open it. He opened it, and it was a gun," end quote.
That does not seem to be how the Secret Service of this country
works.
No,
I don't think that's
normally.
I don't think that person was a female body inspector.
Well, no, definitely not. She claimed she held onto the gun for months before the agent contacted her again.
I'd be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, totally. She explained to detectives, quote, "He showed up again at the door one day, and then he said that I didn't do anything. I said, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to shoot. I don't have the guts to shoot, you know? How am I going to do this? He said, okay, we will help you with this," end quote. So a lot of suspicious activity here in her descriptions.
Yes.
The agent told her to put the gun under the back seat of her car and that they would do the rest. A detective told Snap that he knew it was preposterous and said he was, quote, skeptical about it the whole time.
Good.
End quote.
So he's paying attention. He's awake.
He's awake. Good. She was arrested on the spot, and when Ghulam's family found out, they weren't even surprised. His niece said, quote, "Hard as it is, deep down, I knew Shazia had something to do with it all along," end quote.
Damn, we're talking about family drama for the holidays.
Know.
Well, honestly, as soon as the arrest was made public, a staff member at the school Shazia attended came forward to help. He said that she had been close with a 19-year-old man named Jake Clark in one of her classes. Well, apparently Jake had come to the staff member asking for advice. Shazia wanted him to buy her a gun.
Oh.
So they go talk to this Jake guy, and he was straightforward with investigators. During the interview, he told authorities, quote, "She was like, look, I had this problem. My friend's husband has been abusing her daughter and has been abusing and raping her daughter and abusing the wife. In my country, you would be killed. You would be hung, beheaded, and be killed. Here, I went to the police. The police won't do anything. I want him taken care of," end quote.
To be honest,
that description, if that's accurate, you know, like,
yeah,
that sounds horrible.
Right.
So she offered 10 grand, but Jake said he refused the offer. Financial records showed a different story, though. A detective told Snap, quote, "We found two $5,000 transactions, 1 month before the murder and one a couple days before the murder. Mm. Installments, if you will.
Yeah, installments.
Cell phone records corroborated the story. The detective continued, quote, "The day before the murder, Jake texted his address to her to go meet her. We knew at this point there's something up. Jake is more intertwined and involved in this case than meets the eye," mm. end quote. And DNA evidence placed Jake in contact with the bag containing the gun.
Right, and we didn't really say whose bag it was, right? Was it Ghulam's or was it hers? Who knows? But there was DNA of his on it. That's
right,
all we
exactly.
know.
Well, detectives arrested Jake and immediately confronted him with the evidence. He maintained his innocence, but the story just continued to unravel. Okay, get this. He said that minutes before Shaja called 911, she called him in a panic, telling him to meet her on the corner by his old apartment. When Shaja pulled up, he claimed that he saw Ghulam Ayobi fatally wounded in the front seat. He said, quote, "She pulled up, boom. I see him, he slumps, she pushes him back. I need you to take this," end Ugh. Quote. She apparently gave him $100 in the bag containing the gun, and he walked into the apartment complex and threw it in the trash. Mm. Like, I just love how, like, almost innocent it just so seems.
I
like,
know.
She murdered someone, gives off him a bag, and he's like, you know, it's in the trash.
Into the trash, off we go.
He wanted to help her get caught, supposedly. Jake said, quote, "That was my thinking behind it. Now, I seen him in the front seat dead. I seen the murder weapon. Now, you guys have the murder weapon. You guys give medals to people for that, correct?"
Oh, my God.
I mean, what a question to ask.
Oh, my God, this person is
he wants a trophy.
Mentally deficient or something.
On April 15th, 2013, Shaja went to trial for murder. Mm. Prosecutors believe that Shaja had been unhappy with her life in Ghulam and because of her culture and children, didn't feel like she could leave him. A local NBC affiliate, KCRA, wrote that prosecutors said Shaja Ayobi had at least half a dozen motives, including trying to free herself from the control of her husband. Having already been divorced once, they believe Shaja didn't feel like she could go through it again. Because that's what I'm thinking. Like, if you could do it once... I mean, I understand it's a little taboo, but why not twice?
Yeah. I mean, this is what we always go back to. It's like...
Why is murder like your first thing?
Why is murder over shame? It's like people would rather murder someone than feel like the public is or their friends or family are shaming them. It's
Absolutely. Scary.
Well,
KCRA reported that prosecutor said she also stood to get $285,000 in insurance payouts.
Uh-huh.
So she would have also inherited his estate worth at least $700,000.
Uh-huh.
Prosecutor said that Jake got in the van, waited for them to drive home, executed Ghulam in his seat, then Shaja dropped him off where he tossed the gun.
Wow.
But the defense actually gave another story. Shaja claimed that she suffered years of abuse from Ghulam and had severe PTSD from growing up in Afghanistan, which could very well be possible.
Sure. A lot of trauma.
She said that his work away from home helped, but that was only worse when he got home. And ultimately, this murder was an act of self-defense. A legal analyst told Snap, quote, "During her sentencing hearing, she recounted her fear that she was going to come home and find her children the victims of her husband's abuse and that they would be the ones that ultimately were killed. And that's why she did what she did," end quote.
I mean, yeah. Who really knows, though? I think there's no real way to sort of prove that. I mean,
you don't go to police beforehand, there's nothing. Right. I mean, like, I know that you're climbing to do, but you don't tell anybody,
you know,
like, even Ghulam's family, nothing. That's.
I mean, there was nothing about in the trial other people
claiming.
saying she had black eyes or whatever. It's just, that's her excuse.
Well, the jury didn't buy it. And just convicted her on all counts. So they read kind of right through her.
Yeah.
The San Diego Union-Tribune reported that the jury decided that even if Shaja Ayobi had been abused by her husband as she testified, he did not present an immediate threat to her the night she either killed him or had him killed as he would laid his head back to rest in their car. So it wasn't a self-defense thing. I mean, maybe ultimately you could argue that, but not in that moment, which I think it matters in that moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting little debate there because it's kind of like...
Do you take the advantage when he's
not going to be
vulnerable, when he's vulnerable?
Right.
That's a good
point. Something to think about.
Well, she was sentenced to life with the possibility of parole in 26 years. She'll be eligible for that in 2038. So not crazy
not far away.
In 2014, Jake was convicted of first degree murder and given life with the possibility of parole in 28 years.
Wow. What a story.
Got even more than her.
Yeah, and it just has me thinking, like, it's so crazy how people feel so cornered into these positions that the only way out for them is to murder, but then it's like, but then you go to jail. Like,
you
rarely get away with it, you know?
I mean, if we could, hypothetically, if it really was self-defense and she murdered him because of how it was, imagine that woman's life.
Right. I mean, maybe if...
PTSD from Afghanistan comes here, never sees her husband, he beats the shit out of her, and then she's got to be in prison for 30 years, basically.
Well, it also makes me wonder, like, say we do say that the, you know, the domestic abuse was real. Say sure. It was happening. I wonder if she sees, you know, eligible for parole in 2038 as a better life than sticking it out with this guy, you know, like
maybe.
I don't know. You have to think about all that stuff. It's a terrible reality that so many people live in on a daily basis.
Yeah, but maybe it's scary.
It's interesting that she would have gotten the life insurance plus his estate was worth $700,000. I mean, it's amazing to me that like he came probably with not a lot of resources, right?
And
like from Afghanistan, and starts a hot dog stand and then a pizza place.
But
and
then also became like prominent in, you know,
contractor.
Yeah, as the contractor. Right. So you never know.
Yeah.
Save up forever.
It's just impressive.
No, it's definitely
but
impressive.
But that's a motive right there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's also in some ways his story is a great example of immigration working very successfully for the United States Army.
Lock him up. They should have been locked up right away.
Listen,
we got to shit this down right now.
Yeah, political stances aside. Let us know what you thought about this episode. Hashtag Martinis and Murder at Jay Thrasher, Carpe Darren, Matt the Bartender. And do we want to do some shout outs?
Let's end on a positive note.
These are our last shout outs of the year.
Yes.
There are a couple of birthdays to mention this week because a lot of you are having birthdays all of a sudden.
Yes.
So, Darren, shout out to TRX_Tina.
Yes.
Who reached out to you to say she has a birthday coming up.
Happy birthday. I believe it's 38.
38. And a friend of our show, Megs, who hung out with after our Boston show, has a birthday. I think she said the 21st.
Happy birthday.
And in our Facebook group, Kathy Roccaforte Poteet has a birthday on Christmas Eve.
Great
so,
last name.
Happy birthday to you three.
Carpenter33 on Twitter says, there's something so calming about the way Jay Thrasher says bye at the end of every Martini's Murder podcast.
I don't even know how I say it. Bye.
You say bye.
Probably because I'm like, bye.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just interesting. Thanks, Carpenter33.
Yeah, remember when you thought my last name was Carpenter?
I did. For like the first like 6 months of our friendship, I just assumed it was short for Carpenter.
Right, because people just shorten their last names.
And we started our other podcast currently.
Yep.
And on the cover art that I sent you for approval, I was like, hey, here's just like what I was thinking. Like, I'm going to go ahead and post it, but let me know if you think. And it's like currently by John Thrasher and Darren Carpenter. And you were like, honey.
I was like, it's great, but that's not my name.
And that's where I learned that that is not your name.
Right. And that people don't shorten their last names. It's like not a nickname.
Like, what was I thinking? I don't know. It's weird. Last little plug here for our live show, Darren, Brooklyn on January 25th, DC, February 12th. Tickets are in our show notes, or you can head to oxygen.tv/mmlive for details. I think that's it.
Yeah. Also, like you said, in our show notes and also on Instagram. Everyone, thank you so much for listening this whole year. We really, really appreciate you. So excited for 2020. Happy holidays to all of you.
We hope you love our best of episodes.
We love ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Oh, see you next
time. Bye.
Bye.